What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Thank you, Sarah and Mike. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I am Courtney Reagan in for Scott Wapner today. Front and center this hour, is the tech trade tired? I know I am. The sector leading the S&P 500 to the downside today, driven by two big earnings disappointments as the NASDAQ turns negative for the month. The investment committee tackles that key question, plus a lot more. So joining me for the hour, Steve Weiss, Brenda Vangelo, and Rob Sechin. Let's give you a check on the markets where we are at about 12 o'clock on the East Coast. Dow Jones Industrials is doing the best of the major three averages, but still down about 0.4%. And the NASDAQ, as we mentioned, that tech trade, that is the laggard, down about 1% at this point. And of course, the Russell has been struggling this week, so we want to watch that one as well. When it comes to sectors, again, technology is the biggest laggard, down more than 1.3%, and energy is leading the way, but up just 0.3%. So it's been a really interesting week. Steve Weiss, I'm going to start with you, and I know that Mike and Sarah were just kind of ending the show talking about NVIDIA. It's up today. However, it is down about 10% from those meteoric highs, but up about 80% year to date. What do you think? Have we seen the best of NVIDIA for a little while?
No, I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, the meeting coming up, who knows what they'll say at the meeting.
Sure.
They're still the only game in town, really. But it's not really an NVIDIA issue. You haven't seen the others down as much, but like Meta or Microsoft, right, they're barely off their highs. They look like they're down more because of the dollar moves, but on a percentage move, they're not. So I think it's more about the market than NVIDIA, frankly. And right now we're in an information vacuum, a data vacuum. The data that's coming out pales in importance to what we're going to hear from the Fed next week on the 20th. So I think people are pausing. There are always people that get in at the tops, and those are the ones that are the first to leave, believe it or not. So I think that's what we saw in NVIDIA, that's what we're seeing in Meta and Microsoft. Just go through it all. And then there are those that get nervous, that have huge gains in there, that are taking some profits. So right now it's a consolidation period. That's what I've been saying for a little while. And that could be influenced by inflation numbers, which we saw, which were too strong. So at this point, with you see rates backing up, or yields backing up rather, there's nervousness that the Fed, that Powell's going to come out and say, hey, we're still going to pause, and that the soft landing, he won't say this, of course, but others think soft landing's in question, as we heard from Jamie Dimon, which has been consistent. So where do I stand? So I have shorted the Qs, I have shorted the SMH, because I don't want to take profits in the companies that I own, because I still think that they will grow into their valuations relatively soon. So for example, an ASML valuation will go from 40 times to 25 times over the next year. So why pay taxes and all that? So I think it's just a time of caution not to put new money in the market pending what's going to happen with the Fed, and valuations are still inflated.
Okay, so you're not a LIFO, you're not a last in, first out, you're just pausing.
I'm just not putting any more money. The positions that I want are big enough. It's a relatively concentrated book that I run.
Okay.
So why add to the concentration?
I see. But Brenda, you've taken some profits in this area.
We did. So late last week, we did trim NVIDIA and Meta for the majority of our clients, really recognizing there's nothing wrong with the fundamental story for both of those companies. But there is a lot of good news, we think, baked in when we look at, you know, even with Meta, you know, amazing focus, refocusing on margin and improvement, and just the fact that margins beat by 7% in the fourth quarter was phenomenal. But it's a question of what happens going forward, what's already baked in there. The stock has had a huge move up in terms of the market multiple, which is justified, you could say, in many ways, given refocusing on the core business that has happened there. But we just recognize that these both companies, NVIDIA stocks and Meta, have moved a lot in a very short period of time. and think this is a market where it pays to be disciplined and take a little bit off the table. You know, when we came into this year, we were expecting the S&P could appreciate in line with earnings growth, which is low double digits, and we've already had a really big move higher, primarily led by some of these large cap tech names, even though we've seen a broadening. But tech has absolutely been a big part of that. And again, it's justified in many ways because earnings growth in the fourth quarter for many of these companies was really phenomenal and a standout. But just think that, as you mentioned, the trade is getting a little bit tired. I think for longer term investors, even it makes sense to just take a little bit off the top and reposition portfolios a little bit.
Fair enough. Rob, I mean, NASDAQ is coming off its fourth down day in five. Obviously, we're down again here today, down about 1% for the composite. What do you think overall? Is this tech trade tired, or is it just time to take a little pause, take a little breather, look around for other opportunities as maybe we're finally getting some broadening out? What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we still think tech's in a strong uptrend as a sector. But semi strength is masking some hardware weakness. So it's not shared across all tech, with the strength in semis being obviously the leader. Hardware is weak because of Apple. It's 10 times the size of the next largest hardware name, which is Cisco. Software is seeing some stalling in momentum, as Steve said, with big names like Microsoft, although not that much. It's also 10 times the size of the next biggest name, which is Oracle. And semis have gone kind of parabolic, led by NVIDIA, which we don't own. I think the message remains that you need to respect momentum and higher growth revisions, but be aware of stretched valuations, positioning, and sentiment. And so right now, dips are being bought quickly. What that shows you is that institutional and individual investors are still trying to get full allocations. That's kind of the last leg of the buying chase. They're doing it based on resilient economic growth, which is, kind of keeping them semi-ebullient. Once there is a catalyst, though, such as growth estimates getting cut in this complacent environment, I think that's where we have to be careful because valuations are so high. So we're invested. We're not at extremes from a stretch valuation standpoint. We see a lot of value underneath the surface. Our portfolios traded a 20% discount to each of their respective benchmarks. And so unless we see kind of an EPS scare or something like that, or a growth scare like we saw in 22, we think we can continue to ride. Although, you know, we're fundamentalists, we generally get a little more cautious here at these times.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's making really good points. And Weiss, you know, Wolf is talking about several potential downside catalysts there. Rob was talking about potential upside. But they point out things like fading Fed liquidity, inflation surprises, oil price spikes, tightening financial conditions. I mean, how closely should we be paying attention to any of those? And then how fast do you make moves if one of those catalysts starts to spook these shares further lower?
Yeah, I think Wolf has generally been, I wouldn't say bearish, but most cautious.
Okay.
So you always have those catalysts out there. Nothing ever changes. There's always a potential black swan event like tight credit. We're actually going the easy way. We're going to easier credit, right? So I don't really buy into that. The market, I think, is fairly well in balance with a slight bias to the downside because of what I anticipate from Powell on the on the heels of what we saw with the inflation data. So that's why. But, you know, I don't disagree with what Brenda did in terms of selling stocks. But from my view and the way I manage money, I'm very concerned about taxes. So if I think Microsoft is overvalued now, which I do believe it's slightly overvalued, or Meta, not as much, then I'm going to hedge more than I'm going to sell because I don't want to have to replace it and I don't want to pay taxes. So I have to assume that we're going to see a major decline in it, whereas Brenda's clients are managing their own taxes. She's not managing it for them. So I'm just in a different position.
Sure.
So look, I'd say I agree with Rob. I think technology would continue to be the leader. I met with the CEO of one of our companies, and what used to take them 4 to 5 weeks to produce now takes 45 hours. Okay, and this happens to be a technology company involved in AI, so they're in the cutting edge. Just wait till that starts going out broadly to other companies, right? So to me, we're just at the beginning of this evolution, revolution, so to speak. So that's why I'm staying there, because I think it's going to move very quickly because it's so competitive. So I don't want to give up my positions in the companies, which I believe would be the biggest beneficiary. And I would talk about positive catalysts more likely going into the second half of this year. I think the first half of this year is sort of going to be like where we are. You know, we'll get to earnings. Earnings, there should be good momentum continued in tech. You'll see somewhat that didn't perform as well, like in Alphabet because of the misplaced launch they had, recover, and that has been recovering. So I still think that's where the best opportunities for Alpha. In terms of broadening out, take a look at the data we got today, right? The economic data shows that the economy is weakening. You have, and as far as consumer goes, sure, you have Dick's Sporting Goods, but you also have the others that we're seeing, and more retailers are disappointing than surprising. So it really depends how you manage your inventory. But overall, the economic trend, in my view, is lower. So if we broaden, those stocks get overvalued. I would tell you some industrials are.
That's very interesting.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah, Rob.
Steve, I have a question for you. You know,
personal question or stock related?
Could be either. Could be either. But it's stock related. It's not stock related. More macro related. The narrative has really shifted back to a Goldilocks narrative from mid 21, right, where you have continued growth trajectory, but you also have decelerating economic data, putting us in a sweet spot for markets. And what that really did is it set us up for a lot of complacency. And ultimately, we had a pretty big give back in some of these names in 2022. Do you worry that the narrative shifting to Goldilocks right now mirrors that type of pattern?
Yeah, so actually, that's a really good point. And I think we have started to see a shift somewhat from it being a slam dunk, there's going to be a soft landing and a Goldilocks scenario, to one that maybe that won't be the case. So let's not forget that the auto companies have tons of inventory. How are they going to do? Tons of inventory in EVs. And that as rates come down, you would think naturally that that car buying will pick up because the financing costs are less. We're seeing some home buying pick up. But yet, you still need to see consumers keep pace with what we saw with the increased pricing from the pandemic and the scarcity fact that drove auto buying. So I personally think that companies like that aren't going to do so well going forward. Now, of course, if employment stays where it is and we continue wage growth, then that could be a different story.
Right. Well, the next big test for NVIDIA actually kicks off next week on Monday at the NVIDIA GTC conference. Christina Partsenelfels joins us now with three things to watch. So what should we be expecting ahead of this?
Well, I'll be there. So the first thing is going to be any update on their next architecture for a new AI chip, the Blackwell, so the B100. We'll want to know specs, you know, how is the memory content? If the memory content surpasses AMD's latest chip, then that's going to be a negative for AMD. Then we'll also want to know maybe, you know, some details on the average selling price, because that'll affect margins. Some rumors that maybe it'll be about 30% higher than the H100, if that's the case. Good news for margins, but may depress demand a little bit. The second major point is just this adoption across enterprise. We've seen this with the CapEx of the spending of the big players like Google, Amazon, Microsoft, et cetera, but there's all the other facets of the market that still have yet to implement their own large language model. So we should expect some more commentary about that, as well as maybe some partnerships. There's been some talk, Micron alluded to something, Oracle alluded to something.
Yes.
So you'll see the derivatives of that event move in unison as well. And then last but not least, inferencing. Inferencing is the second part of a large language model. You know, you shoot the training in and then use the training data to answer queries. And on the earnings call, Jensen Huang, the CEO, said that 40% of data center revenue actually came from inferencing. And most people were a little surprised by that number because NVIDIA has been so well known for training, and the concern was they're going to lose that market share to an AMD or others for the inferencing. And so I'm sure he will talk about this being the next big driver for demand, and then how that maybe will result in an update to their total addressable market, which is at $1 trillion, crazy number.
Wow.
But you look at it, what is it, 5 years ago, the market cap was $100 billion, and now it's $2.3 trillion or a little bit more than that. It's incredible.
Those numbers are pretty astronomical. It almost feels like the FOMO
trade. I mean, Brenda, what would you want to hear from NVIDIA next week that might entice you to buy a little bit more, get back in? I know you just trimmed some of those profits, but is there something that you could hear that, oh my gosh, I can't risk not being in?
Yeah, well, see, we're still in,
right,
for sure. We've just taken a little bit off the top, recognizing just how much the move, how much of a move we've seen. I personally don't know if there's anything we could hear that we haven't already. I mean, Jensen Huang does a pretty good job on the conference calls talking about this enormous market they have, how every data center needs to be updated eventually, and how they're going to touch all different kinds of businesses. They do have pretty big concentration in revenue right now in terms of customer concentration with the Microsofts and the Metas of the world. So I guess hearing more about how that's going to broaden out potentially in the shorter term could be good news in terms of, you know, potential risk from those customers next year not spending quite as much as they spent this year. But outside of that, I don't know if there's really anything new that would change our mind. I mean, still feel very positive about the company and their positioning, but would have to be a lot to really get us to step in to buy
more. What about you, or if you get more, we get more details from the Oracle partnership that was sort of teased out, but we don't know that much about.
Yeah.
Would you be interested there and some of the tertiary players?
I would be interested there, but I'd also be interested in his take on the customers, their key customers that Brenda mentioned, who are so aggressively looking for other solutions.
Okay.
Right? With Taiwan Semi, with ASML providing their most advanced technology to allow the competition to blossom and bloom. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be that dependent on NVIDIA as a sole source at very high prices. Mm. So I want to know how he's thinking about that, and if he's going to lower prices, you know, for his chips so that you don't have this massive rush for the door, which is building. I mean, every large tech company's come out and said, we're building our own chips, we're designing our own chips, and ASML is the toolbox for that, and Intel Foundries. So how are you going to compete with that burgeoning threat? So that's what I'd like to know.
Okay, that's a good one. One stock that is not benefiting from AI, actually, Adobe shares sinking after those quarterly results. Christina, why is it down so much? I mean, they beat earnings and revenue guidance a little late, but is that the whole reason for the downward pressure?
No, a little light, and they also had a $25 billion share buyback, and you think, decent report. But a lot of it has to do with, one, the magnitude of the beat, which the bar is so high now for anything AI related that when you don't beat at that magnitude like NVIDIA has been doing, you start to see the sell-off. So that's part of the reason. And then the other part is more specifically this long acronym that's really net new digital media annual reoccurring revenue. And so that came in a little bit light compared to buy side estimates. And because of that, there's worried that maybe there's going to be pricing tailwinds and most of the drag forces for Adobe will be in the second half of this year. And then, of course, you've got the concern about competition. Mm. So OpenAI has their new text-to-image platform, and that's, you know, directly encroaching on Adobe's turf. Adobe CEO was asked that on our airways yesterday on Closing Bell Overtime, and he said that it's all good. You know, competition's good. It's just going to bring more video to the platform. And then eventually they're going to have to, you know, edit the video using Adobe programs. And so he's seeing it as a good thing. He even name dropped Jensen. The amount of CEOs earnings calls that, like, the Midas Touch or, you know, pixie dust of NVIDIA,
right,
they'll just like, we're working on this, we're partnering. And so he mentioned that too. And they probably are. It's just, as an outsider, just listening into these calls, it's incredible how often they do that. And then hoping, you know, you see this spike, like, oh, this company may be working with NVIDIA.
Yeah.
Boom, stock goes up.
Felt like the quarter before it was just saying AI, but now they have to get more specific
it's
like Jensen Huang or NVIDIA,
yeah,
right?
The cool
they got to get more
school.
Specific.
You're associated with him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Rob, you own Adobe, getting a lot of price target cuts here today from Bank of America, JP Morgan, UBS, Barclays. I mean, what are you thinking about your position right now?
We actually added to it not too long ago. I'm gonna give you a comment from our chief marketing officer today, who felt the need to speak on our morning call, Chris Broussard. He said, "Let me tell you something. Creative folks are not going to move away from the creative suite anytime soon. Mm. It's too embedded in workflows, and frankly, there's just too much time invested in how to use it. They use it all day long. There's no way they're gonna move off of it, so workplace efficiency would grind to a halt. When you look at this report, if you're a fundamentalist, fundamentally, this was a great report. The company beat on top and bottom lines. They reported 11% revenue growth, 15% EPS growth. Their biggest segment also beat expectations, growing 12% year on year. The net, what Christina talked about, the net new annualized recurring revenues actually beat, but fell short of kind of forward expectations. Closely watched metrics. Long term, this company is not going to be disintermediated by AI. It's going to benefit from it. And we view this as a time investors should be considering buying this.
Brenda, you're nodding here. And, you know, Deutsche Bank says, look, the disappointing first quarter that wasn't reiterate buy. What do you think about Adobe here?
Yeah, I think if anything, this is a buying opportunity that's presented itself here. But I also think it's a great example of a scenario where the AI hype was really, turns out, driving a lot of the returns that we've seen in the stock, obviously, and that's getting flushed out today. But to Rob's point, I think this company is still incredibly well positioned in their market. They are a leader. The switching costs are high. The fundamentals of their business continue to remain healthy. And I think they should have a benefit from AI, but it's just not as big as I think everybody was initially hoping, at least at this stage.
Right. I mean, the one-year return on Adobe up 72%. I mean, that is really strong. And I think Rob's chief marketing officer makes a good point. If you're a user of this, you're going to continue to be a user in it. You're fully embedded in this process.
That's right.
I just want to know the CEO's opinion on the controversy with the photo with Princess Kate, but that's for another time.
I think that points out to, you know, they've got to work on their game a little bit. You shouldn't have been able to tell. But I'll tell you, I was gleeful when they missed.
Were you?
Yeah, I was. And I'll be gleeful if it goes down another 10% or 15% because I sold it down there.
Okay.
So so I'd like a chance to buy it back. So
okay.
No offense, Rob. And, you know, I'm rooting against you here.
There you go. Well, that's how we make a market, right? Well, straight ahead. New year, new Goldman. That's a message from CEO David Solomon in his annual shareholder letter, at least, as he points to a rebound in capital markets, we should say. But will it be enough to reignite the stock? The investment committee weighs in after this quick break. We'll be right back.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one, which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tastytrade Inc. is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon dropping his annual letter to shareholders today and laying out a strategy for 2024. Leslie Picker joins us now with the details. Hi, Les.
Hey, Gord. Yeah, Solomon calls 2023 a, quote, year of execution for Goldman Sachs while saying he's optimistic about 2024. Remember, in 2023, Goldman was backing off from its consumer expansion and taking write-downs from that as well as exposure to commercial real estate, all while M&A activity dropped to a 10-year low. This backdrop has required some investor patience. As you can see, Goldman has lagged many of its peers even this year, year to date. But it's a new year, one that the firm plans to spend focused on its two core businesses, global banking and markets, as well as asset and wealth management, according to Solomon's letter. Now, global banking and markets, which includes investment banking and trading, comprised nearly two-thirds of Goldman's revenue last last year, even in a weaker deals environment. Solomon said in today's letter that the firm stands to benefit as capital markets rebound. Tonally, this may be a bit more constructive than comments he made even 6 months ago at a conference where he said activity is improving, but it's still a ways off. Solomon noted in the letter that the firm increased its wallet share in banking and markets in 2023 by nearly 350 basis points since 2019. On the asset and wealth management side, Goldman touted that it surpassed its alternatives fundraising goal a year early. Since 2019, the firm raised $250 billion for that initiative. Court.
Les, remind us again what Solomon had to say about the consumer. I know you mentioned, obviously, they stepped away from that consumer business unit. But in general, he did give his thoughts on what he sees about the U.S. consumer right now, right?
Yeah, and it was interesting. This was in a paragraph where he kind of characterized his conversations he's having with CEOs. And he said, and this is kind of similar to what he also said at a UBS conference a few weeks ago, that those consumers that he would put in that paycheck to paycheck bucket, mm-hmm. kind of the lower income consumers, they are feeling the effects of inflation. So even though the velocity of inflation has been decreasing, just the fact that prices still remain high has had an impact on those consumers. And he's seeing some slowdown in that market. And that's just based on his kind of conversations with CEOs who operate and have a direct line of sight into those consumers. So it mirrors a lot of what you've been reporting, Courtney, in terms of just this bifurcation in the consumer group right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Les, thanks so much. I appreciate you bringing that to us in the details of the latest Goldman shareholder letter. Now, Weiss, you own Goldman. Leslie mentioned investor patience has been needed because it's been a little bit of an underperformer compared to peers. How are you feeling about the letter and the year ahead? You still want to stay where you are with this holding?
Yeah, of course. It's really been an underperformer just near term, away from J.P. Morgan, which hits new highs, but also the movement in J.P. Morgan is less. When you hit new highs, it doesn't mean you're up 20%, it means you're up a tick versus the old highs. But look, to me, Goldman is a microcosm of what happens in corporate America, right? You hit a misstep, and the question is not how you get knocked down, but how you get up. And when you take a look at the aggressive action that David has taken towards the businesses that were underperforming, the mistakes that were made, and just said, get them off. We're not going to stay married to them because we got involved. We're going to get divorced. We're going to move on. So I do think you will see the capital markets open up in the second half of the year as rates come down. And that just doesn't mean IPOs and secondaries, because that really hasn't picked up. We see some headline transactions. It means M&A, which is the most profitable business. So Goldman is the best position there, in my view, has the deepest benches, and I think they'll just continue to kill it. And I think David's a great steward of the company. He's done great things. He's tried new areas of growth. He's changed the market for them from just being a trading market to also being an asset gathering market, which should get a higher valuation in the market.
And then maybe he needs to use that Chumbawamba tub thumping song. I get knocked down, but I get up again.
Yeah.
Brenda, I know you don't own Goldman, but obviously M&A has been a big deal. That the focus is, because frankly it just hasn't been there. Mm-hmm. He's talking about obviously a hopeful turnaround there. So if investment banking does see a turnaround, is Goldman the biggest beneficiary, or a name like JP Morgan also stands to benefit, which I know you hold?
Yeah, I mean, our preference is to stick with a name like JP Morgan, okay. which isn't relying solely on this piece recovering in order for their business to do well. It's more diversified. But I do hope that we do see a pickup in M&A. I think it would also be healthy for the market overall, especially if we do see M&A of small, mid-sized companies. I hope that would help with the valuation discovery about how should we really be valuing these companies since they've been lagging so much over the last few years relative to large cap stocks. But I also think the IPO calendar is, there's a pipeline that's full, but we haven't really seen a lot of activity there. But certainly think that would also be certainly a healthy development for the market overall to have some freshness. Assuming those deals come to market and act well, also would help with valuation discovery within those sectors that they lie in, as well as potentially mid-cap stocks, which again have lagged, but that's where we think the bigger opportunity is.
Okay. We're getting a new alert on Boeing. Phil LeBeau has the details. Oh gosh, Phil, what do we got?
Well, it's not a huge deal in terms of how the stock is reacting right now, but it is important to note that Fitch has downgraded the credit outlook for Boeing, going from positive to stable. And the fact that they're going from positive to stable is not a surprise, given the challenges that Boeing now faces as they are seeing their max production limited. They likely are going to be seeing higher costs as they work to double down and ensure quality and safety is at the level it should be at, which clearly it has not been over the last couple of quarters, if not the last year or so. So again, Fitch downgrading Boeing's credit outlook, going from positive to stable. And again, not a huge reaction from the stock. I think the street looks at this and says, yeah, that seems about right. Guys, I'll send it back to you.
Thank you very much, Phil. Brenda, you own it. Does it seem about right? A fair downgrade of the credit?
It does. I hate to say as a shareholder, but there has been, unfortunately, nothing but bad news for Boeing over and over again. We've been sticking with our position, though. We do think that, you know, the pipeline for planes is not going to change. We think that the company continues to be well-positioned in that regard. But clearly, there is a lot of work to be done. And whether that's, you know, acquiring Spirit and then bringing more of that control over the production in-house, I think that would be a very important step in the right direction. But clearly, there's a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of restoring confidence in this company's ability to really focus on the details.
Absolutely. Case in point, when we said we had an alert on Boeing, I got a little nervous. But that one wasn't so bad, I guess.
Yeah. I was hoping it would be a management change, personally.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying that for years. Yeah. And obviously, you know, I think that's what's needed to restore confidence in it.
Probably not the only one that has that opinion. Let's get over to the headlines now with Pippa Stevens. Pippa, what's going on?
Hey, Courtney. If Iran sells ballistic missiles to Russia for the war in Ukraine, the response from the international community will be swift and severe. That from a senior administration official to NBC News today. As the G7 countries issue a warning to Tehran, the new sanctions will be imposed if it happens. One of them being considered banning Iran Air from flying to Europe. The official does say the administration has not yet seen confirmation of any missiles on the move. 80,000 Muslim worshippers attended the first Friday prayers of the holy month of Ramadan in Jerusalem's Old City as the war's shadow loomed over. Police stepped up surveillance in the Old City heading into the Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the holiest sites in Islam. And Alec Baldwin has asked a New Mexico judge to dismiss charges of involuntary manslaughter in the Rust movie shooting. The motion alleges prosecutorial misconduct. His trial over the death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins is scheduled for July in Santa Fe. Courtney, back to you.
Pippa, thank you very much. Well, up next, our call of the day, a big price target hike on the top performing healthcare stock over the past year. We have ownership on the desk, so we're going to debate that one. You're going to want to hear this. Halftime is back in two.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Welcome back to Halftime. Let's get to our call of the day. Eli Lilly getting a big boost from J.P. Morgan. The bank raising Lilly's price target to $850 from $775. Rob, you own this one. I guess you'd be excited to see this one hit that price target or at least get close. I imagine you agree with this call?
You know, we do. We view the market for obesity treatment as one of the biggest secular growth opportunities in healthcare. According to Goldman, obesity treatment is going to be a $100 billion market by the end of the decade, up from $10 billion in 23. Half the world's population will qualify for these drugs at the end of the decade. In addition, they're proving to be effective beyond obesity and heart disease, addiction, et cetera. And so while Lilly is very expensive at a forward 55 times PE, it's still a company that we continue to own. As Weiss said early, we're taxpayers, and we want to make sure that, you know, we're not getting off this momentum train too early. We could be in for a trim if it gets to the targets that you're talking about, but long-term owner.
Yeah, because they're at 752 right now, so 850, you got about $98 to go. You also bought some exposure to a different name because you want some more exposure even to that obesity drug space that you mentioned here with part of the reason you like Lilly.
I guess you could say we're going for seconds at the obesity buffet, Courtney. We bought some Novo Nordisk, and it's just a less expensive way for us to get exposure at a 37 times forward PE. These two companies have 80 to 90% market share with tremendous profitability, 80% growth margins, 35% free cash flow margins. And so it is a wonderful business. You have to pay up. So why not look for a less expensive way to do it?
These GLP-1 drugs are just absolute blockbusters. It's going to be amazing to see what happens over time. Brenda, I understand you're in the healthcare trade, but not specifically in these names.
We aren't, but I do feel like GLP-1 in my mind is very similar to AI in certain respects.
Okay.
Just given the thought at this point in time about how much the growth opportunity is going to be there and how they're going to be applicable not only for obesity, but a variety of other chronic conditions, health conditions. So I do think that maybe there's a lot priced in, especially with a Lilly, Novo Nordisk. I think there's also a question there about just the company's structure and their ability and willingness to increase supply, which is very different from a for-profit company like Lilly. But nevertheless, we're on the sidelines. Admittedly, we missed the trade here, but we would be looking to get in if we did see some kind of pullback. But for now, I think they're just too rich for us.
Weiss, do you have thoughts on either this call for an 850 price target on Lilly or the space in general?
Look, I missed it all the way from pullback. I think, these spaces tend to get crowded pretty quickly. So I'm just going to be in the sidelines now.
How far of a pullback would you need?
You know, it depends on what the competitive landscape is. So I don't have to really think about that right now. I've got enough to think about, like, getting Rob a new joke writer.
And you got to focus on NVIDIA next week, too. Well, coming up, we are running through a number of big portfolio moves from the investment committee today. But first, Mike Santoli is going to join us for his midday word. You don't want to miss that. He always has a lot of wisdom to share. He's like a market poet to me. Halftime is back after this. We're back on Halftime. Senior Markets commentator Mike Santoli joins us with his midday word. Mike, a lot of focus on the 10-year. It's touched 4.3. We've also been talking about the weakness of tech, but I'm wondering if tech is weak, can we really actually broaden out anywhere else if yields are still this high?
That's the trick, Court. In fact, it's been the pattern that it's really been a struggle for the majority of stocks to do well when yields are higher. Although, I guess the market is sort of putting on a braver face than I might have anticipated, considering yields are at the top end of the range. Today, if we finish lower on the S&P 500, it'll be the seventh down day in the last 10, and yet we're up over that period of time. Huh. Yeah, two big 1% gains. So the market is sort of going sideways a little bit under the surface. It's trying to digest this big rally. I've thought for a couple of weeks that any upside above like 50-50 on the S&P, like the last 2 or 3%, felt like a bit of an overshoot. It was all about like just ever higher momentum aggression in some of the big semi names and things like that. But if this is the character of the digestion that we get, it's probably okay. But Fed's going to determine some of that next week, and the bond market's a little more sensitive to what it might hear.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. Is the sideways action because we're just waiting to hear from the Fed? But do we really expect any big surprise?
No, I don't think we expect a big surprise. I think some suspense has been injected into what Powell might say, simply because we've had a series of warmer than expected inflation numbers. So it's been really a good news story all year so far that so coming into this year, there was a real standard way of denigrating the rally and saying it's all about the hope for immediate rate cuts and deep ones, or B, it's all about sick stocks. And both those things have kind of been disproven because we've pushed off the start of rate cuts, and now the market only anticipates maybe three. Maybe the Fed is going to change that next week. But so far, we've done fine because the economy's held together, earnings are going higher, credit markets are great. So we'll see if the whole equation can still work together and if we can continue to kind of like dodge the raindrops here as we go, because you haven't had a real broad pullback, not a 3% pullback in 5 months.
Right, absolutely. Good stuff. Mike, thanks for joining us as always. Well, still ahead, a retail reality check with Lululemon and Nike, set to report their earnings next week. One of our committee members just got into the trade ahead of the print. We'll debate that one coming up next.
When change makers can challenge the status quo, they will met adversity. So I think that change maker will have to be driven by a profound higher purpose to bring great benefits to human society. Only then the change makers can motivate themselves and transcend these kind of adversity into motivations.
Welcome back. Let's hit some key retail earnings coming our way next week. Lulu and Nike both reporting Thursday after the bell. Rob, you just bought Lulu. This is such an interesting one to me because it's been strong for so long. So what made you look at it finally now?
Yeah, a little bit of a play on the consumer, offering brand power, history of consistent growth, leading returns on invested capital. Obviously, the earnings are next week. We're looking for mid-teens, top and bottom line, and continued progress on operational efficiencies. Frankly, we looked at both Lulu and Nike and opted for the company that is continuing to execute well versus the one that's a turnaround story. Obviously, a highly competitive industry, susceptible to volatile consumer trends, but this has emerged as a consistent grower, generating 20% revenue growth over the last 10 years. And relative to its consumer peers, it has industry-leading gross margins and operating margins. And it trades at a discount to its PE average over the last 10 years. So as we see a broadening out in markets, we kind of like this.
Its margins certainly are impressive, and sort of the brand power that it's had, even as so many competitors have come into the space. Weiss, you previously owned Lululemon. You don't own it anymore. Would there be anything that would get you re-interested in Lulu or a competitor?
You know, I think about it all the time. Every time you go by one of their stores, I mean, they're crowded. And I do think it's a unique brand, unique offering. Aloe's there. You've got a couple others, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But I don't believe they're having the same impact that Lulu has, nor the broad offering. Aloe is just very concentrated on yoga. So I think it continue to grow. I'm challenged by any retailer with that kind of multiple, though, despite the margins.
Sure.
But yet that kept me out of CMG, Chipotle, and stock continues to do well. So I think there are stocks that have a valuation paradigm that will go. I think Rob will do fine with it, as long as he doesn't become an adverse advertisement by wearing the clothes in public. So.
Well, they fixed that see-through pants problem, Rob, so you don't have to worry about that, at least. Brenda, I know you're not in Lulu or in Nike, but you are in TJX. Sometimes you can find Nike product at TJX, which I don't know exactly what that says exactly about Nike's turnaround story, but why TJX? Why does that make sense to you?
Yeah, we think TJX is really uniquely positioned in this environment where everybody is upset about having to pay more for everything. Mm. So I think they benefit not only from their core customer, but also from a customer that's just looking for a bargain. Lots of brands are having dislocations, and that means excess inventory that could end up at TJX. So higher quality inventory, uniquely positioned to appeal to a large variety of customers in this current environment. And the results have been good. So we continue to like TJX. That's our preference for brick and mortar, which we don't really have any other exposure to brick and mortar retail.
That's interesting. They have been a consistent outperformer, and it's so unique that they've been able to be successful in brick and mortar without really expanding too much online. They have a very tiny online business, and it's worked for them.
That's part of the appeal, especially for the core customer that really likes to shop and is willing to do the work. To pick through inventory to
do the treasure
gems,
hunting.
You know?
Yeah. It's a good way. I like to zone out with my headphones and I just go through the racks. Up next, more portfolio moves from Rob Seachin, including the one industrial stock he's buying that's trading near all-time highs, the reveal and the debate after this break. We're back. We've got some more committee moves for you. Rob, you trimmed O'Reilly Auto and bought Fastenal. Tell me about this one.
So buying Fastenal, they are a construction supply company selling bolts, nuts, etc. Resilient profitability, leverage to accelerating manufacturing activity. They have a ton of essential products. They're one of the fastest growing, most profitable companies in the U.S. capital goods industries. Their margins are terrific, 45%, but they have super strong competitive positioning. It's a premium valuation. However, we think this can be supported because of earnings momentum.
Sometimes those unsexy names can really turn it in for you, huh? Nuts, bolts.
Well, as O'Reilly.
Right.
Well, you know, we've owned it for a long time. We've talked about That and AutoZone on the show quite a bit. Defensive grower in the consumer space. We sold a little bit of it because of where it's sitting right now.
All-time high. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a durable discretionary business. So really like it. And that's how we got some of what we needed to, rotate out.
Well, good job. Congratulations on that, getting out at a nice level there. You're all going to want to stay with us because our final trades are coming up on Halftime. It's already that time. See you soon. We're back on Halftime. Time now for final trades. Rob, you get to go first. What do you got for us?
That is great. This is a CEO override by my investment team. I wanted Adobe. They told me I had to do Lulu, so we're doing Lulu. We talked about it earlier.
Okay, yep, and Lulu is down 1% here, but earnings are next week, so we'll see what happens. Brenda, what's your final trade?
Mine is CME Group, where I think we could see a pickup in volatility or a pickup just in hedging positions, like Steve was talking about earlier, just given the market return that we've seen this year.
Okay, and Mr. Weiss, bring us home.
First of all, you saw what Rob did there? He got two final trades in.
That's true. He did kind of, right? He snuck one in.
Archer Daniels, look, it's been acting great, partially because commodities have been acting better. So it's a good way to play the commodities acting better with lower risk because they will restate.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, that does it for Halftime. We're out of time. The exchange starts right now. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.